See, what our listeners don't realize is that every time we record, we actually start with a prayer session.
Come on, guys. Hold hands. Cross the internet.
Okay.
You got my hands tight? Bow your heads.
Yes, of course, yes. My head is bowed.
Dear Emrakul, who may be in Innistrad, hallowed be thy name. Our kingdom come, thy will be done, with great big slimy tentacles. Give us this day our extra turn, and forgive those who have coloured magic in their casting cost. For you are the glory, the kingdom, and forever. Amen. Right, let's get Commander in.
No, I usually just get drunk first.
First?
Speaking of which.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Here we go, everybody. I'm Phil DeLuca.
I'm Nate Burgess.
And I am Sean Watson.
And we are Commanderin. Yeah! Gobble, 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 gobble. Yeah! Gobble, gobble, gobble.
Commanderin!
Yeah! Gobble, gobble, gobble. Thanks for listening, everybody. We focus on topics the community wants to hear about and talk to interesting people along the way, but never, ever talk about three banned topics: religion, politics, and Hearthstone.
Bear in mind what the theme for this week is. Two of those things might be touched upon.
Uh-oh.
I'm going to give you a clue. It's not Hearthstone. Carry on.
That's right. So you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Reddit, iTunes, and mtgcast.com, and apparently podbay.fm, by searching for Commanderin MTG Podcast. I had to say it like that, guys. Sorry. Sorry, listeners. I'll go back to normal voice now. We have a fantastic episode lined up for our listeners this week, don't we, guys? This episode, we focus on the American holiday near the end of every November, known as Thanksgiving. But first, we have some news. The news, of course, is I'm still in Japan, and so our audio quality may be a little bit off, in particular my audio quality. But Nate is doing an excellent job editing. Congratulations, Nate. Congratulations. Wait, thank you, Nate.
I win! Yay!
Woo. You win the job of editing a podcast. Well done.
Well done.
It is both your prize and your punishment.
God. Is this what it sounds like to try to keep a three-ring circus in order? And in other news, we want to take the time to thank Bruce Richard, who writes for the Magic the Gathering website, also known as The Mothership. And in a complete surprise to all of us, he listed several podcasts that he listens to, and we were among them. Yes, this is news. This is a little self-promotional news, perhaps. So if you haven't had a chance yet, go over to The Mothership and read the article Magic Audio Style, where he lists such worthies as Limited and Constructed Resources, Marshall Sutcliffe and Louis Scott Vargas, and The Mana Pool, Chewy and the folks over at mtgcast.com. They do a podcast. The A-Team, clever, with Scotty, formerly with Scotty Mac, but a bunch of fine folks there. Drive to Work, of course, which is Mark Rosewater's own podcast.
Do you reckon he had to put that one on the list because it's his boss?
I think he was pressured to do that.
I'm joking, of course.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure there was no call in the middle of the night where Mark said he had read, you know, Bruce, I've already read your the first draft of your podcast article, and it doesn't include Drive to Work, but it better.
Don't put it at number one. They'll think it's a fix.
Yeah, put it in the middle somewhere, but it better be in there. These and other Mark Rosewater impressions, free of charge.
We love you, Maro. We like your work. You're doing a good job.
Yeah, really. He's fantastic. Of course, the folks at the Command Zone made the list. They are always on every list, as they should be. They're fantastic. Josh and Jimmy. Then he also lists the girlfriend bracket, Aaron Campbell's Snack Time with Mike and Ant. And that's a very Vorthosian podcast. So if you like stories and like to hear about how the art was created and other production-related stories, then that's for you guys. That's Snack Time with Mike and Ant. And then, hey, look at this. His number two podcast is Commanderin. Thank you again, yeah. Bruce. Yeah, that's fantastic. And the thing we've been really laughing about is that he describes each of our voices, and Sean has an English accent that sets him apart.
Well, hello. Pip, pip.
Pip, pip. Cheerio.
Pip, pip, boys. Cheerio. Over the top, John O'Bear. What about the Queen and all that?
Nate has a professional radio voice with a cadence like none he's ever heard on a magic podcast.
Why, thank you, Phil.
Yes, very good, Nate. And Phil is apparently smooth and appears to be trying to control a three-ring circus, but in reality is just as crazy as the other two. This is
the reality is you're far crazier than me and Nate.
that's funny. Nate and I have a friend named Frank Coker who repeated that line to me, and I'm like, Bruce doesn't know me very well. And I said, I'm crazier than Sean. But truly, truly, Nate is the most insane among us.
So some of you listeners might have picked up that I am actually a mental health professional by trade. I'm not really a podcast co-host. I'm actually Phil's caseworker.
Sorry, I was drinking some green tea there with being in Japan, and you almost made me spit it on the computer, which would have ruined the recording.
But everyone who is interested in sort of playing casual magic, casual might be the wrong word, whose drive behind playing magic is fun and enjoyment and perhaps less the kind of spiky cutthroat side of the game should really check out Bruce Richards' articles that are entitled Serious Fun. And I think you'll get a lot out of them. So go read his work on the Mothership.
Yes, absolutely it's worth good. Reading.
Yes, and I know we're taking the mick, but if you listen to our show, which Bruce does, he'll know it's all good-natured joshing, as they say.
Yes, and the final podcast on his list is called MTG Potpourri, which I'm glad he listed because I had never heard of it before, to my shame. But of course, it features Conley Woods, Adam Stiborski, a.k.a. Stibbs, who writes the Command Tower articles on the Mothership, and Tom Gustafson. The description here is excellent. I'm looking forward to it. I actually have listened to all of these podcasts except for that one. So I'll be tuning in. Anyway, thanks, Bruce. This was a real pick-me-up. The three of us got quite the kick out of it. And special thanks to Josh Lee Kwai for alerting me to its existence, because I had just gotten up and he had already read it that day, because of course he is
in the past,
right? So oh no, well, he was awake when the article was actually released. Japan. Okay, so that's our news. Oh, so we have a watch list segment. So
what list?
The watch list.
Da, da, da. I think it's a worthy addition.
All right, so Nate, why don't you? You've put this card on the watch list. Let's talk about it. And first, let's tell everybody what the watch list is about.
So the watch list is cards that are they're basically pretty badass cards. And they affect the meta, and when other players in your meta see you playing them, they're going to make adjustments to their deck.
So, Nate, before we begin this watch list segment, do you want to tell everybody what our episode's about? With your professional radio voice, unlike any ever heard.
So, each year, every American household cooks a turkey and fattens themselves up in anticipation of the cold winter months. For this Thanksgiving episode, we will have a segment on Bird Tribal, Phil will highlight his favorite creatures with the devour ability. And Sean will present his perspective on Thanksgiving from the eyes of a loyal citizen of the British Empire.
Oh, they're subjects, Nate. They're subjects.
Oh, from the eyes of a loyal subject of the British Empire. And so, for this watch list, we're using Sword of Feast, because, yeah, see what I did?
Yeah.
Feast and Famine. Sword of Feast and Famine. Artifact equipment. It costs 3 colorless. You equip it for 2, and equipped creature gets +2/+2, and has protection from black and from green. That's okay, but hey, whenever equipped creature deals combat damage to a player, that player discards a card and, here's the kicker, you untap all lands you control.
I'm going to put this out there right at the top of this watch list. In my opinion, the best single piece of equipment ever printed for our format.
Yeah, it's the best sword, certainly, out of these sword of thingy and thingy.
No deck. No deck, other than maybe a green-black auras deck, because then if you put it on your creature, you can equip the auras, doesn't want to run this card.
Green-black heroic would not run this either.
Yes, true. But, I mean, they're two very popular decks.
Yes, they're dominating the format, at least the tournament scene.
And you're not even using this for the discard a card, really. That's just delicious gravy on top of the turkey meat that is Sword of Feast and Famine.
Mm-hmm.
See what I did there? I'm trying to join in with your holiday.
Yes, it was very accurate. It was a very accurate depiction of how Thanksgiving meals actually work here in America.
It's pretty close to reading you get an extra turn, but your second turn doesn't have a combat step. Like, you get to cast everything out of your hand again. Or if you've got a commander, like Daxos, the new Daxos, you make a load of tokens, you attack. You make a load more tokens. Or you cast the spells you want to cast that normally you couldn't. Attack, untap your stuff, make a load more tokens.
Hey, I'm sold. Yeah,
we've talked about Prophet of Krufix a lot, and she untaps all your lands on everybody's untap steps. So you get to, you know, every time you untap your lands, you get a free turn, basically.
Yeah, it's quite good. It's quite good. So you can, in theory, just middle of the game, you can actually cast this, equip it, attack with it, untap everything, and you get, like you guys were saying, you get that extra turn. It's fantastic. Strangely enough, though, I don't include this in every deck. Why wouldn't we include this in every deck, guys?
I could guess.
Because it's really expensive.
Oh, that's true.
Price tag?
In terms of dollar pounds,
not a cheap card.
Sword, Feast, Search. Now, the original Mirrodin Besieged version is a mere $15.55 as of TCG Mid as of recording time, with the foil at $60.
Wow.
Yeah. There was a version in the Modern Event deck 2014, and it is significantly lower in price, but I can't tell from here right now.
So, if you're running Stryonic or Stryonic Resonator, and your deck has a lot of instant speed or activated abilities that require mana on creatures, you can copy the triggered ability of the sword, untap your mana twice.
Oh, that's great.
Which is good. Yeah. Yes. That is a trick that listener Pete likes to do with this card. And yeah, if he's got anything that requires, right, Daxos is another good example, but there's plenty of creatures that do it that have tap to activate, just mana but not tap the creature to activate abilities. You basically get a free round of activating all your abilities.
Mm-hmm. Hey, look at this. Even the Modern Event deck version of this is $14.97 right now, plus $3.99 shipping. That's the lowest price I can find for a near mint. So if people are buying this card, they don't care. It's not collectors driving this up, it's players.
I own 2 of them. I wish I owned 15 of them.
Yeah, indeed. I wish I had bought more Modern Event decks.
They were good, though.
Yeah, they were. Well, they're good to strip down, but you wouldn't actually show up to a Modern Event with
them. No. So the watch list on this, I don't think it's even close to being ban-worthy, is it?
I haven't seen it often enough lately, but it does make me keep my artifact removal cards in any red decks that I use.
Yeah. Pro blacks are good because a lot of spot removal is black, so it keeps your creature nice and protected as well.
Yeah, protection from green is good against Phil.
Hey.
Yeah, Phil.
Yeah. One of my favorite things to do, it's actually very satisfying and also very frustrating on the opposite end, is when someone equips this sword to a creature and you just terror it or otherwise black removal it at instant speed. That's always fun. It's good for laughs.
So are we saying in our Thanksgiving feast, this is the knife, our carving knife, that we're going to carve up the Bird Tribal deck that we're about to sort of talk about with?
I would say so. This is, in fact, the carving knife, isn't it? That is a great analogy. So
I'm very much in the spirit of Thanksgiving, as you could tell. Carving the turkey of Commander.
Oh, yes, indeed. And so this brings us to Derevi Bird Tribal. Now, Nate, you've put a lot of effort into this. Do you want to set this up as well?
So Derevi Imperial Tactician. She's in green, blue, and white. Legendary bird wizard, 2/3 with flying. Whenever Derevi enters the battlefield or a creature you control deals combat damage to a player, you may tap or untap. Target permanent. 1, green, white, blue, put Derevi onto the battlefield from the command zone. So, command zone tax does not apply to Derevi, and she can be flashed in at any time. Now, there are a lot of cruel and horrible ways to enhance and exploit Derevi's tap-untap and command zone flashing abilities, but for this Thanksgiving episode, I'm just going to be talking about birds.
Yay!
So, let's start with owls. They're cheap, flying 1/1s for 1 and a blue, and they also scry 3 or 4 when they enter the battlefield. They come in augury, sage, and spire owl flavors.
If you look at the art on all of those cards as well, there's a side business in Dominaria that you can do just selling jewelry for your pet owl.
It's true.
All of them are wearing some serious bling. That, or in the Magic Universe, owls are seriously big gangster rappers and love to display their bling.
No, I could see a Potter store back in Nocturne Alley with, owl bling. Just owl bling specialists. They could make a living there.
Ooh, do you have any claw grills that I can put on little Hedwig here?
Claw grills. Oh, that's excellent.
I don't have it in front of me. Which is the owl that's really good when we're actually talking about cards that is a serious consideration for blue-white decks where you can sack it to counter target spell unless its controller pays an additional 1.
The Judge's Familiar.
Judge's Familiar. That is a ball buster of a card. Once it's on the table, it basically adds 1 to the casting cost of every spell you want to cast.
Indeed.
Yeah, so it's sort of like Grand Arbiter Augustine, but
super budget.
More innocent.
Yeah.
More innocent looking.
And so another card that you would include then, Nate, is the Aven Mind Sensor, right? That's a 2/1 bird wizard for 2 mana and a white with flying and flash. Uh-oh. Instant speed shenanigans in white. What does that mean? It means if an opponent would search a library, that player searches only the top 4 cards of that library instead.
Yeah, that breaks a lot of commanders.
Yeah, it sure does. It always sucks when your opponent has 3 mana open, 1 of which is white, and then when you cast a tutor says, oh, hold on.
I have used this card. My opponent's gone Omnath, Locus of Rage. I'm going to sacrifice this Wooded Foothills. And I've gone Mind Sensor. You can see whether you've got another land in the top 4 cards of your library or not.
Wow, have you done this recently?
Yes, yes, I have. Wow. Funny you should ask that, Phil. All right, so good.
Yeah, it's brutal. Love it. Love it, love it, love it.
And that's why it's like a $10 card for an uncommon.
Is it only 10?
That's a card that's begging for a reprint, Wizards.
I don't know if they can. I think it's on the...
What, because of the frame on it?
Oh, right, it's in Future Sight, so it's eligible to be reprinted. Yeah, hopefully we'll see a Commander set that reprints this, or maybe they'll go for all the big money cards and put that into Conspiracy 2 or 2016 or whatever it's going to be called.
TCG Mid is currently $9.11.
That's it?
Yeah, for an uncommon.
Well, right, but that means the price has dropped significantly.
Well, the foil is a snip at $38. I'll just order four.
All right. Nate, what's your next card?
My next card is Thrumming Bird for one and blue. Is a 1/1 flying bird horror that proliferates on doing combat damage to a player. This bird is also in my Izuri Claw of Progress and Marques of the Black Rose Infect decks.
That's pretty sweet.
Yes. Flying bird horror describes a few women I know in the East End of London.
I've got Emiria Angel for 2WW. It's a flying 3/3 angel with landfall. And, of course, Thanksgiving, right? We need a steady supply of food. Whenever a land enters the battlefield under your control, you may put a 1/1 white bird token with flying onto the battlefield. Happy day! It's like little quails for the children. And rabbits.
Or the rabbits.
That's our Easter episode.
About chocolate eggs.
Oh, you're gonna have to tell your rabbits to watch out around Easter because we'll eat.
I'm hoping they'll be dead by then. I mean, I love all. They're very old. When they die, I can get a dog.
You have the dependency chart laid out, right?
And I've had them for so long that I can't just give them away, and I don't give away animals I made a conscious effort to buy to animal sanctuaries because that's an unfair drain on their resources. And they sit and look at me with their floppy ears thinking, I hope you die, fat man. And I sit there looking at them saying, I hope you die, you furry bastards. You know, and, you know, we live in resentment and fun times.
It sounds like a typical British household.
The British way.
That's great. That's great. You know, Sean.
What's our next? Well, Sean, carry on.
You can actually keep them forever.
Oh, have them taxidermied.
Exactly. Or turned into
slippers. I'm pretty sure that. Well, see, I love my favorite dogs are greyhounds and whippets. And what are those animals famous for doing other than racing? Or when they're racing, what are they chasing? That's right, rabbits. So if I do get them stuffed, I'll use them as lures for racing my greyhound.
Excellent.
Anyway, before I talk about fantasizing killing two beloved household pets that my wife loves very much.
Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Yay.
Let's move along to the next card.
Oh, my. Right.
Okay. So, Revelark. While not exactly a bird, if you look at the art on the card, I'm reminded of a certain wedding I attended where, in an effort to make a more dramatic photo opportunity, when the bride threw her wedding bouquet, they unfortunately released the celebration doves at the exact same time. The resulting collision caused 7 casualties. Revelark, for 4W, is a creature elemental 4/3 with flying. When Revelark leaves play, go get 2 creatures from your graveyard with power 2 or less and put them onto the battlefield. Evoke for 5W. Revelark appears and immediately self-destructs in a blood-misted shower of petals and feathers. The feathers! The horrible manners.
So, if anyone is interested in becoming the third host on Commandering, send your emails too. Not to continue a running theme of me and Nate arguing over the pronunciation of words.
Yes, I knew this was going to come up.
It is, and remember, every time you say it wrong, a small part of my soul dies.
That's why we say it wrong.
It's pronounced Reveil-Arc. Reveil-Arc.
Maybe in Britannia.
Wait, so if I intentionally mispronounce the words,
I will end up looking like a Nazi staring into the Ark of the Covenant.
So your soul is under my control, is what you've just said?
And all people's, to be honest. All people's.
All people's souls are under Nate's control?
Oh, that's a given, isn't it? No, I am under the control of all people that mispronounce words.
Mm-hmm.
Reveil-Arc! Anyway, I there's a nice bird I like, a nice blue bird called the Keeper of the Nine Gales. I don't know what the Keeper of the Gales 1 through 8 do.
Yeah, they don't warrant cards, whatever they are. They don't warrant cards.
No. The Keeper of the Nine Gales for 2 and a blue is a 1-2 bird wizard with flying. And tap this and two other untapped birds you control to return target permanent to its owner's hand. Now that is a genuinely good card in a Derevi deck, even one that isn't even necessarily bird tribal, because that's allowing you to do untap shenanigans with your stuff.
Yes. Although, actually, do you want Derevi in your hand at all? Because if you have a choice to return it to... Oh, right. With the tuck rule, whenever it returns to your hand, you have the option of putting it back in the command zone. So in this particular case, you want to bounce Derevi back to the command zone in order to... Listen to me. I'm talking about this like it's a real deck. Sucker.
You drew us in, mate. You drew us in with your delicious cranberry sauce-laden meat.
Well done.
Yeah, that was like the cranberry jelly next to the stuffing. It made me just start sinking my teeth into it and eating way, way too much of it. The Warden of Evos Isle for 2 and a blue is a 2-2 bird wizard with flying. What? Birds with flying? Creature spells with flying you cast cost 1 less to cast. Hey, look at that. Again, playing bird tribal. Are we going to be playing a lot of flying, a lot of cards with flying on it? Yes, we will. I think the Warden made it into my bird tribal deck as well. Moving along.
Unfortunately, since Derevi, this is a big unfortunate, it's a flaw in the design of this card. Since Derevi has no black mana in her casting cost, we can't cast a certain wonderful flying death touch artifact bird known as the Baleful Strix. Well, there are several Strixes, but the Baleful Strix is the best one. These come in all flavours: Parasitic, Tide Hollow, and the aforementioned Baleful. In fact, none, not a single one, guys, of the legendary bird commanders have any black mana in them. What did the Strixes do, eh?
Strixes.
Strixes. Strixopodi.
So, Nate, did you look that up?
It's Strixes. Singular matrix, plural, matrices. Singular index, plural, indices. Singular Strix. Strixes.
Poor Strixes. In fact, I would like to tell you now about a new project I've been working on. It's a birds of the multiverse sanctuary that I've opened for birds that have no home and no commander to love them. For only £4 a month, that's merely $6.50 to you Americans, you can sponsor your own Baleful Strix. We'll feed him. We'll even show you a picture of the card he's let us draw when we let him out of his pen to have a fly around.
So what you're saying, Sean, is we need an Esper bird commander.
I think it gets taken by the artifact Esper commanders.
Hey, the send triplets, that's three Esper birds.
Oi!
I'm so sorry, lady listeners. I'm so sorry. I grew up in London. It was... I'm from a working class background despite my flattened accent. I'm so sorry. Here's a term of endearment where I'm from.
It's okay. they all like Spike and they've all watched Buffy, so...
Yep. Yeah. And that was a Canadian actor. So, yeah.
By the way, I took the time to look up stuff on the internet. I'm trying to use my radio voice.
Radio?
Radio? Wikipedia says Strix, plural, Striggies.
What?
Or Strixes. What the?
Wikipedia, right, we can alter that, right?
Striggies?
Striggies?
Striggies, Striges. I'm not sure how to pronounce it.
Striges.
Striges or Strixes. Strixes.
I'm sticking with Strixopody.
It's not like dominatrices.
That's your go-to plural, is it, Phil? Inside the mind of a DeLuca.
Well, you were there this time when I walked through Hooker Alley, so.
And listeners, he only has to make a 4-block detour to get through Hooker Valley on his way to work, so.
Yeah, it's only a little out of my way.
You're there to help these poor unfortunate women, I presume, Phil.
Oh, of course. I mean,
but anyway, moving on, we're going to go to Bird Enchantment.
Enchantment?
Enchantment? What? Bird Enchantment? I don't understand.
Ah, Garrick. Garrick, how we miss you.
I strike birdies, they don't let me come near them because I are green. Green like the flappy flaps.
I didn't realize that you were coming into this episode.
Hello!
We are talking about Derevi, and Derevi does have green in it, so it's not too far of a stretch for you to make an appearance.
Bye-bye, listeners! I go eat turkey now with, I don't know, Big Macs on the side.
Oh, you're American?
Could you not tell? No, they've never released Garrick of the Enormous Girth yet, so they've not done his.
Yeah, I tried looking up cards that had the words feast or feed or meal in the title, and a lot of them are in black and green, so... You could have Garrick Apex Predator as the Thanksgiving Planeswalker mascot.
Bird enchantments. Are there bird enchantments? There's one, isn't there? There's a couple. This is one of the best cards you can combo with everyone's favorite Phyrexian Praetor, Eleshnorn, and this card is Dovescape. So, if you ever wanted to lock down a board with infinite swan songs, Dovescape's the card for you. It's an enchantment for 3... and 3 of either white or blue, so hybrid white-blue. Whenever any player casts a non-creature spell, counter it. That player puts X 1/1 white-blue bird tokens with flying into play, where X is that spell's converted mana cost. So, if you have Eleshnorn and Dovescape, you put in X 3/3 bird tokens, and your opponent can't cast spells. Sorry, non-creature spells.
They all turn into birds.
Yeah, that then die. Yes. Dovescape's a doozy. Yeah, I used to run it in my white-blue Grand Arbiter control deck that I took apart because everyone apparently hated playing against it.
Well, yeah. That's understandable.
It wasn't even a stacks deck, really. It just stopped you playing spells.
Right.
Unless you begged permission for me to do it. And then when it came in, if you did anything cheeky with it, I could exile that spell.
Yeah.
I mean, what's there not to like?
I mean, until it's completely taken out of your hands when the Dovescape is down on the table with the Eleshnorn. At which point you're like, look, there's nothing I can do. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, I can't destroy Elesh Norn, can right. I? Because, you know, I can't cast non-creature spells without giving myself more doves. And I know you guys don't want me to do that. So, fine, fine. I'll tell you what. I'll just kill you all with my army of birds. Go Dovescape.
Okay, so moving on, there are a couple of enchantments. Favorable Winds for one and a blue gives all your flying creatures plus 1/+. And Gravitational Shift, 3 in blue.
Creatures with flying get +2/+0. Creatures without flying get -2/-0.
Yeah, so kind of reminiscent of Elesh Norn in that sense.
Non-lethal, but yes.
So both of those are enchantments in blue that boost your flying creatures. Of course, Moat is also a good enchantment in white for flyers if you don't like having money.
Phil, I want a Japanese moat.
Last I looked, moat was over 300.
Right now it's $316.55.
Wow. I want a Japanese one, please, Phil. Sort that out for me?
I'm right on that. In fact, I've already picked up 3.
Buddy. Awesome.
Yeah. So, Soul Catcher's Aerie? What's that card?
It's an enchantment for 1 and a white. Whenever a bird is put into your graveyard from play, Phil, you could put a feather counter on Soul Catcher's Aerie. All birds get +1/+1 for each feather counter on Soul Catcher's Aerie?
Crikey!
Yeah. So this card only works in a bird tribal deck.
Yes.
But it's really cheap, and it's kind of comparable to Cathar's Crusade and Door of Destinies in a tribal sense, and it's really cheap for what it does if you're playing bird tribal.
It's 75 cents and only 1 and a white mana. So 75 cents means that there must be some legacy or modern bird tribal. Not modern because it's...
Yeah, when I said cheap, I meant mana cost, so I guess aggressively costed is the term.
I knew what you meant, Nate.
Yeah. Still, kind of crazy that there's a bird tribal and these formats that I just don't play. I should know more about them. I'm so bad.
I can describe them all to you in pithy quotes if you want. Well, just one quote for all of them. They're the reason your cards for Commander cost way more than they should. There you go. Now you know about them.
Good cards are good.
I'm already kidding, listeners. I love modern. Legacy's brilliant. And, oh my God, Standard's great when I'm paying $70 for a Jace that's still in print. Oh, I love it. It's brilliant.
You have fun with that. Moving on, I guess, to Bird Instants and Sorceries. So here's one, Flurry of Wings. Instant for green, white, and blue. Put X, 1/1, white, bird, soldier tokens with flying into play, where X is the number of attacking creatures. So we've been talking about Arachnogenesis lately. It's an instant. It's got the same converted mana cost. It puts X tokens based on the number of attacking creatures. And this card, it gives you 1/1 flyers instead of 1/2 reaching spider fog. Is it still a worthy card, do you think?
Well, in bird tribal, certainly. But if one is playing bird tribal and you're playing spider tribal, Arachnogenesis wins because it'll eat these flyers like that. Bam!
Yeah, spiders all have reach.
Yep.
It's not a terrible card, though.
The natural enemy of the turkey.
Spiders, the natural enemy of the turkey.
Hey, do you know how many turkeys... Do you know how many turkey farmers lose each year to spiders? It's got to be large.
Well, there's the packs of wolf spiders.
That's right. The ravening packs of wolf spiders, and they invade the turkey farms. And, oh, those poor turkeys. Those poor turkeys.
A joke only English listeners would get is that I bet there's at least one spider called Bernard Matthews, which kills a lot of turkeys every year. I'm not going to explain that joke. Just trust me.
Pip, pip. Well done.
If you're British, you're going, oh, jolly good joke there, dear boy. Bernard Matthews, hilarious. Ha, 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 ha.
Yes, but, quite.
I do like at least one idiom per episode.
Mm.
Idiom. Yes. All right.
Yes.
Let's put another bird on the Barbie.
Isn't that Australian?
That's Australian.
Isn't that British?
No.
No.
Dude, I knew that one.
They all sound the same. England?
Have you been to Britain? We do not have Barbie weather, as you call it.
What? I can't find the Barbie for all the fog. Hey, Bruce.
Gerald. Put the kettle on. It's pissing it down with rain again. Oh, quite right, Margaret. I will. I don't know why we bother. Quick, pass me another copy of the Daily Mail so I can beat myself about the face of it for reading such utter trash. You are right, dear boy. Carry on. That's right, for the Thanksgiving episodes when I start breaking out stupid Britishness. It's appropriate.
Airborne right. Aid is a sorcery. It's a sorcery. Airborne Aid for 3 and a blue. Draw a card for each bird in play. Wow. And so, Nate, you suggested we play Dovescape.
Yeah, so you play Dovescape, and then you wait a turn or two for everyone to get some birds on the field. Then you play Airborne Aid and draw 20, 30 cards. And then you play the coat of arms that you just drew. See, as long as you have the most birds, then coat of arms is just fine.
Okay. Yeah, that's not a terrible card in this flimsy idea for a deck. Yeah, I mean, you're in blue as a color, so card draw is not a massive problem, but if you're going pure birds, yeah. Hey, Nate, I've just thought of a card you've missed in birds, instants, and sorceries. Wing Shards, which is a great card, a genuinely good commander card.
Oh, yeah, it is. Read it.
Mm-hmm. It's a 1/2 white for an instant. Target player sacrifices an attacking creature, which is already pretty good. And it also has Storms. When you cast a spell, copy it for each spell cast before it this turn. It's not the first one you'd go to, but it's in the list of get rid of those annoying indestructible creatures which are flying around the table.
Yeah, but you cast Arachnogenesis or Flurry of Wings right before you cast this one.
Yes.
Not after.
That's true. So you get the extra storm trigger.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got another one of our jewelry-wearing owls on the artwork. And the owl on the artwork for Wing Shards, not only does he have a necklace on, but he has a Chewbacca-style bandolier on as well.
My God. What is happening?
And I can't tell whether his head, he's wearing like a pimping crown type affair, or whether that's meant to be his fetish, or he's had...
No, that's maybe, like, that's owl, that's an owl helmet.
Yeah, have they thrown like, or it could be like, look at it, it looks like someone's thrown chocolate pudding in his face really hard.
That's probably why it's so pissed.
Oh, I know what it is. They mistook him for a turkey, and that's someone's thrown gravy in his face to moisten up his meat.
And he's like, you're not going to eat me.
I ain't no turkey sucker.
Do I look like a turkey?
I'm a Wookiee owl beast with a bandolier.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't need no bowcaster. I got wing shards. I don't know why he's a stereotypical 1970s pimp.
But you know what? It works, so I say we go.
I think that probably concludes Bird Tribal.
Oh, wait. One more.
With Huggy well, Bird.
Yeah, not in Bird Tribal, but seriously, folks, if you're playing a tribal deck and you have white, there's one more enchantment called Shared Triumph for a white. As you play Shared Triumph, choose a creature type, and creatures of the chosen type get +1/+1.
Yep, it's a great card.
Wow, that is a great card. I've never seen that before. How did I miss
really?
This?
Oh, yeah. It's good in token decks because they tend to create all the same type of creatures.
Yeah, it feels like I should be making room in Marath for that card. Only two and only one and a white? Huh.
Yeah.
But he's not. There's no bird on that.
Yeah, but it is tribal. I did have. We are talking about tribal.
No.
Yeah.
You can see he's got an axe in that picture. So you see where I'm going with this. He's just chopped the head off a turkey.
And that's the triumph. Everyone's gone, now we eat.
A turkey on every table. So what would Thanksgiving be without a little devouring? Right,
Sean, as someone who has literally never celebrated Thanksgiving in his entire life, I don't know what Thanksgiving would be without devouring.
I was just going to say, Sean, now you've never been to an American Thanksgiving, have you? Or any Thanksgiving.
Or any Canadian Thanksgiving or Botswanan Thanksgiving.
Right.
I've not even been to a Kazakhstani Thanksgiving, believe it or not.
Well, you haven't lived until you've been to a Kazakhstani Thanksgiving. And I realize that the British do not have a tradition for giving thanks. It's more like exchanging complaints about the weather, about the Tories or whatever you call them over there.
The Conservatives is the Tories.
Yes.
Yeah.
Or Fox News, or as you know, it's Sky News.
The Conservatives, lady listeners in Britain, have announced that they will not be reclassifying feminine hygiene products. So they still count as a luxury item and are taxed accordingly in the same tax bracket as caviar and champagne.
Oh, well, you know, that sounds very appropriate.
Yeah, thanks, Tories.
After all, being clean and hygienical, that is a luxury.
Yes.
Yeah.
Jesus. Yeah.
Anyway,
I know.
Here we are.
Sorry,
that was dangerously close. That was dangerously close to politics and religion, wasn't it?
No, not in this country. We actually know the difference between church and state in this country, buddies.
My God.
There you go. Oh. There's religion and politics in one. Ba boom.
So, what we do in our American Thanksgivings is, we lay out a veritable feast. It's quite a shame, and anybody with a conscience feels somewhat guilty for the amount of overeating they are about to do. Even in America, we upgrade our mugs to 60 ounces. Our plates become the equivalent of garbage pail lids. And gravy is no longer served in little tureens, but actual canoes are brought out with gravy filling those canoes, and lumps the size of children's heads, and in some cases, at Nate's place at least, actual children's heads in the gravy.
You got to get the head cheese out. Yeah.
That's right, and so we begin to devour. We Americans eat everything until we achieve a state of being that can only be assuaged by large quantities of football and parades of ostentatious floating.
I was going to bring up the football a bit later.
Characters, yes.
Now, am I led to believe, am I correct in thinking that Americans do this because you all hibernate for the winter, so you need to build up a thick layer of blubbery fat so you can sleep for 3 months of the year before waking up in spring?
You are almost entirely accurate, Sean, except we do not actually hibernate. We simply build up the layer of blubber.
And right, okay.
Now, least we become too jaded necessarily by our facetiousness. Thanksgiving is a holiday in which we express our gratitude. It comes to us from our puritanical founders, giving thanks for these people they were about to subjugate who had brought them free food and showed them only kindness. The Native Americans at the time, when these furriners came over, the foreigners had no idea how to grow food, what to eat, and so they began starving.
These political refugees.
They were political refugees, right. from a certain mother country.
And you let the Native Americans let the refugees in and see how that ended up for them, eh?
Yes.
It's a warning through history.
Fool us once.
Oh, God, the conservatives are killing me. Sorry, conservatives. I mean, you're not actually killing me.
Yeah, ironically, I mentioned the English Conservative Party before, but our right-wing Conservative Party is like the hard liberal left in America compared to your conservatives. So I can't complain too much.
It truly is. It truly is.
Yeah.
And so we give thanks for this bounty. And I would say that our thanks are second only to that of the dragon broodmother. Who, for only two and red, that's right, three reds and a green, so for six converted mana cost, the dragon broodmother is a 4/4 dragon with flying, and at the beginning of each upkeep, not your upkeep, each upkeep, put a 1/1 red and green dragon creature token with flying and devour two into play. And so little baby dragon comes in, or as I should say, dragon. Little baby dragon comes into play and has the option of eating mama to get two +1/+1 counters. Or
no,
the turn after little baby dragon comes into play, its little brother or sister comes into play and then eats it for +1/+1 counters.
Or you just wait until the turn right before yours, and then it devours all the other ones.
Yes.
And then you hit someone with a giant dude.
Yes, and then suddenly baby dragon that comes into play is positively huge. Again, Dragon Broodmother, very, very thankful. We are actually thankful for the Mycoloth. For three and green, a creature fungus, a 4/4 creature fungus that has devour two. Ooh.
I've got to ask. So I'm led to believe with your Thanksgiving dinner, you have a lot of side dishes. This is quite a famous thing. What are the best sides?
Yeah, a lot of root vegetables and
yes,
and breaded stuffing.
And breaded stuffing. Like stuffing wasn't bad enough for you already.
Well, it's only take breaded just stuffing before it's deep fried.
Have you ever had a Scotch egg? That's
oh yeah, great. That's like a hard-boiled egg wrapped in sausage and then
take an egg, wrap fried. It in meat, dip it in breadcrumbs, and fry it.
Yeah,
it's good Scottish food. But what I was going to say was, do you have any mushroom-based side dishes that the Mycoloth could represent here? Because you've already got dragon steaks.
Oh yeah, one type of casserole is green beans and a can of mushroom soup, cream of mushroom soup.
That's actually very good.
That's not a casserole. That's putting two things together in a bowl and calling it a casserole.
Okay, American casserole.
I was going to say, you shut your British mouth.
As long as it's in a rectangular dish, then it's a casserole.
That's right.
I'm going to start taking photos of casseroles I've made.
Yes, rectangular dish baked for a little while.
I'm going to send you a Pepsi, an empty packet of M&M's casserole, I think, after this podcast. It's the first two things that came to hand. Sorry, what does Mycoloth do?
Well,
our fungus side.
Our little string bean and can of mushroom soup casserole Mycoloth says, at the beginning of your upkeep, put a 1/1 green sapperling creature token into play for each +1/+1 counter on Mycoloth. So Mycoloth comes into play, eats something, gets two +1/+1 counters, and the very next upkeep of your own, you get two green sapperling creatures. Now, since you're playing a token strategy with Mycoloth, you probably have other tokens and have probably already devoured a couple of other things. And so Mycoloth is one of those immediate must-deal-with threats, and it's reflected in its price, actually, along with Dragon Broodmother. Very expensive cards.
Just been reprinted in the new Commander sets as well, so you don't have to pay that price for it. Just buy the precons.
So I stepped away at a point earlier. Did we already talk about Mazurek?
No, we have not.
Just making a point that the Devour ability has the word sacrifice in its text.
That's right.
So anytime you use the Devour ability, if you have Mazurek on the field, who's in green, and a lot of these cards that we're going to mention are in green, and he likes to sacrifice things, then There you go.
I am currently brewing a Kresh the Masurek Befriended deck that has that has Michaeloth in it.
Put Shattergang Brothers in there,
and
too.
Shattergang is in there, yes. Absolutely.
As the Michaeloth goes amazingly into Azuri Claw of Progress as well, because each of those sapperlings you're putting into play also gives you an experience counter.
Well, looky here.
Yep. Gets big fast. I can hear Nate thinking, where can I fit this into my Azuri deck? But yeah, fantastic card, Michaeloth.
Yeah, absolutely worth its $5 price. Although, interestingly, the foils are only $2 more expensive.
Ah, just buy it in the pre-con.
Yep. So one of the other side dishes my family always had was we would collect for the entire year prior to Thanksgiving. So every year we'd do this. We would collect what rodents we could. And just the day before Thanksgiving, we would behead them all and put them into a casserole.
Dish.
Of course.
So into a square dish.
A casserole dish.
No, it's rectangular.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, it's rectangular.
And it is baked.
That's right. And it is baked. And I would sometimes, my family would occasionally maybe put some creamed corn in there because of the texture and the color that goes along with the rodent skulls and their contents, because it's really the contents that matter, because you mulch the skulls. How do you like that? So, skull mulcher.
Oh, God.
That was a stretch, dude.
I wasn't stretching at all.
Tenuous at best.
For four and a green, we have a creature elemental, a 3/3 creature elemental with devour 1. Oh, and I suppose it's time, now that we've done our third one, that we should mention that devour says, as this comes into play or enters the battlefield, you may sacrifice any number of creatures. This creature comes into play with twice that many +1/+1 counters on it. If it's devour 2, like the Michaeloth has. And Skull Mulcher has devour 1, so it's 1+1/+1 counter per creature devoured. But this isn't why you play Skull Mulcher. You play Skull Mulcher because when Skull Mulcher enters the battlefield, draw a card for each creature it devoured. Hello.
Yeah, that's very good.
Yeah, quite lovely.
Green card draw is very helpful. Very Golgari.
Very.
I know it's a green card, but it feels Golgari.
Right, and a must include in any Masurek theme deck. Also, Bloodspore Thrynax, brand new card. We've mentioned this one actually every time we've mentioned Commander 2015. Two and
green. Oh, you have.
Yes, because say, I haven't.
don't worry, gents. You'll come to know Bloodspore Thrynax very well.
I know I believe in the color square, but you believe in the color spot?
Yes, the color dot.
Anyway, Karen.
Bloodspore Thrynax, two and green, devour one. Each other creature you control enters the battlefield with an additional +1/+1 counters on it, where X is the number of +1/+1 counters on Bloodspore Thrynax. That's awesome.
That's disgusting. Disgusting. Yeah. It's like a weird Cathar's Crusade for token decks.
Yeah, it's pretty horrible.
Well, it's not that different from Master Biomancer.
Right.
True, it's easier to cast than Master Biomancer.
I don't know.
And it's bigger itself. It's not got two colors in its casting cost.
Well, if you're playing a two-color deck, I think casting Bloodspore Thrynax is more difficult than casting a Master Biomancer.
They're probably similar, for honest, aren't we?
Right, if you are playing a two- or three-color deck, Thrynax is a little bit harder to cast than Biomancer. Because the Biomancer, of course, only requires two and green... Green or blue, rather. So four converted mana cost. And as a reminder, each other creature you control enters the battlefield with a number of additional +1/+1 counters on it equal to Master Biomancer's power. And as a mutant, in addition to its other types.
So if I put in Meandering Tower Shell...
Is that the Phasing Turtle?
Yeah.
There's the Phasing Turtle. And then equipped Umzawa's Jite on him. And then put had Fountain of Youth in play.
What the heck? Where are you going
with
this?
With the Master Biomancer, could I create my own Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle?
Good Lord.
Wow.
I was stretching before.
Slow clap.
I guarantee, right, there are listeners out there in their cars or wherever they're listening to this who have a wry smile on their face at that joke.
Probably just as many listeners as have swerved into a concrete pylon to end this.
Don't do it. Just press the off button. Just pause it.
Right. Don't kill yourself.
It is not our official advice of the podcast to swerve into a concrete pylon. Please do not swerve into concrete pylons.
To end one's own life, don't do it. Right.
Just as an aside, by the way, I have no joke been unable to see while driving while listening to Magic the Amateuring.
What, from laughing so hard?
Oh my God, yes. And
yeah, they're funny.
They are truly funny. All right.
Hey, why don't we try and get them on our show? We could put it out there, public airwaves. Both of you, come on here, talk commando with some silly men.
Well, they're kind of already seeing Josh and Jimmy as far as commander podcasts go.
Aww. But Josh and Jimmy, they're cool guys.
Hey.
Oh, my God.
They're not going steady, are they? I'll go ask AJ Slater what he knows.
I think they've only been to the movies a couple of times.
Yeah. Anyway, moving on.
The most embarrassing moment in retrospect from GP Las Vegas was when I met Maria and Megan. And I thought they were since they were doing Magic the Amateuring, and I hadn't actually heard Magic the Amateuring before, I thought they had just started out. And I told them, they said, actually, Aaron Campbell introduced them. And
oh, Phil.
And she says, oh, yeah, this is Maria and Megan. They're from Magic the Amateuring. And I'm like, oh, you are? What do you do? And they said, oh, we're doing a new podcast. That's what I thought I heard. And I said, oh, really? Good luck.
Oh, Phil.
Oh, God.
Where was I? What was I doing?
You were, I don't know where you were. You weren't handling me. You needed to be handling me.
Was I setting up the, whatever.
Cthulhu that you weren't there, Nate.
No, I was in the room, but I didn't witness this exchange. I wasn't.
Right, yeah. Phil, at that moment, you were still on the other podcast you did, right? Yeah.
No, that was actually we were recording. We had just recorded.
I know what this you was were recording.
Episode
I was just
2.
To pass the embarrassment off onto them, Phil. Yeah. That's so bad.
I know it's bad, and I regret it.
They're kind, because if I was in their shoes and someone did that to me, and I was them, I would have strung you along, taking the royal piss out of you as far as I could.
Well, they then proceeded to kick me off the table that I was sitting at in order to play Commander.
Excellent. Well done. Bravo. I salute you, Maria and Megan.
Bravo.
I salute you.
Yeah.
Bravo.
It just looking back, you can't see me right now, but I am so embarrassed even now. It's just terrible.
I'm embarrassed for you, and I feel embarrassed because I'm associated with you, obviously, Phil.
Yeah.
And I've listened to their show from like episode 3. I feel bad as a fan.
Yeah, I know, right? Now, as a new fan of MTA Cast, new from GP Las Vegas, I'm like, oh, God. It's so embarrassing.
Right, we need to get through the rest of these devour creatures before I lose the will to live and have to drive myself into a pylon.
So the only person I've ever seen play this next card is actually friend of the show, Nick Jaragoski.
I've seen him do this too.
Yeah, Throwmok the Insatiable. It is insatiable. For 3 and red green, so for 5 converted mana cost, you get a legendary creature, Hellion. What, Hellions have a legendary creature and bears do not? And we just missed the perfect opportunity for a legendary bear block. Or a perfect block for a legendary bear to appear in. Thank you for screwing bear players everywhere, Morrow. Anyway, Throwmok. I am not easily distracted, gentlemen. Ooh, look, a blue car. Devour X, where X is the number of creatures devoured this way.
That's amazing. Does that mean if you devour 10 guys, he comes in as 100-100?
Yes. Yes, but fortunately it doesn't have trample, so you can just chump it all day. But
oh, why can't he be green black? That would be amazing in a Jared Golgari Lich Lord deck.
Yes, in a Jund deck, though.
Oh, yeah. Actually, yeah, I can get him in there quite easily.
Next one, speaking of Jund, goes along with this one.
Why are you constantly insulting Mark Rosewater? You're going to do it again with this next card.
What? No, I hadn't thought of doing that, but now I will. No, I won't insult Mark Rosewater, but this is the Morrow Chomper.
Hey. Oh, there you go.
Hey, I'm on fire tonight, boys.
Yeah, you are. The Marrow Chomper for 3 and black-green, so for 5 converted mana costs. You must be thinking, wow, this will be at least as powerful as Throwmok the Insatiable. This one has Devour 2. This one has Devour 2. When Morrow Chomper comes into play, you gain 2 life for each creature it devoured.
Moving on.
And what Devour-themed list is complete without this next card, which, although it doesn't have Devour, is definitely a Devour honorable mention? It's Prosh.
Should be the commander of a Devour deck.
Yes, in fact.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, making notes. Okay. Prosh, Sky Raider of Kerr. Kerr. 3 and black, red, green. Legendary creature dragon, 5/5 flying. When you cast Prosh, Sky Raider of Kerr, blah, blah, blah. Hey, sacrifice another creature. Prosh gets +1/+0 until end of turn. So it's eating its own creatures.
Yeah, it's Kerr. It's not Care. He doesn't care.
It's Kerr, Phil.
He does not care.
So it's a scurvy dog is what you're saying.
What is the opposite pronoun to him?
Her.
Now add a K at the beginning of it.
Care.
Well, sir, I don't care for your pronunciation. Anyway.
Your pronunciation?
Yep.
Pronunciation. You're saying that wrong, and I will... He's doing it
on purpose again. In order intentionally to Phil. Eat away at your soul?
Phil, he's doing it wrong again. Phil.
Is that what you're suggesting?
I will come over there and stick my fist right up your anus.
I had a friend who, no joke, in high school pronounced the word chasm as chasm.
Chasm.
Yes. Chasm.
Okay, so when I worked for Games Workshop, we would regularly get people asking for Chaos Black as a color, or Tau. Tau is when the race is T-A-U, would get Tau. I was like, well, you might say something different to Tau, but Tau, come on. But Chaos Black always used to make me smile.
What is Chaos Black? What is... Oh,
Chaos.
Yes. Chaos, right.
Every Games Workshop fanboy was shouting at you for a second there, Phil.
Well, it was the Chaos that threw me. And you, but and in Britain, you spell that C-H-A-O-U-S, right?
Oh, my God. You'll be thankful I'm not in Japan right now soon, mister.
Right. So, one thing to note, you should never, ever... make the mistake of putting Thassa's Devourer into a Devourer deck. Thassa's Devourer isn't even worth reading.
So stop. Then move on.
And but then, of course, the card that you must put into any green, at least, based Devourer deck is the Thalid Devourer, because we all have Thalids with our Thanksgiving dinner.
You could saute some mushrooms with like soy sauce and brown sugar.
Yep.
Mushrooms with soy sauce and brown sugar. That is not food.
You get some portobello mushrooms and big mushroom caps, and you slice them thin, and then you fry that up with...
I know we do shit food in this country, but I am aware what a portobello mushroom is.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
With soy and brown sugar.
Oh, yeah. Have you tried it?
Making this up as you go along.
No, that's very good. That's very good.
Right. You can take portobello mushrooms. There are two ways of cooking them, right? One, raw from the field. Or two,
you boil them in a pot for 20 to 48 hours. The British way.
Yes.
In a cauldron. Right. With witches.
Over a stove. And when I say you boil them, I mean your servant or butler boils them for you.
I think I've paralyzed Phil.
There is a difference between the servant and a butler. I'll explain when you're over here.
Is that like a footman and a valet?
Valet. I'm sweary tonight, aren't I? Yes, like a valet. God's sake.
Sean, we've all watched Downton Abbey. We know what British life is like.
Downtown Abbey.
Downtown Abbey. Oh.
So, Sean, do you want to share your British perspective?
Okay.
I realize you've been sharing it this entire episode.
I did warn you when you picked this as a topic that I will have little to contribute other than piffle and waffle for the whole thing. So I looked into the history of Thanksgiving because outside of it being a football weekend, and as you know, ironically, I love American sports, I know nothing about the holiday. So after reading that in detail, I've given you a 8-card pictographic representation of my understanding of what the holiday is and represents using Magic the Gathering cards. So if you want to put all these in a deck, it'll have to be... actually, ironically, it has no blue cards in it. So everything else, though. You're no commander for this.
It's Golgari.
Well, no, because there's white in with Karametra. Maybe. There's no red, actually. So it's Abzan, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's an Abzan deck. Right, so we start off with a healthy dose of religious oppression. So what you say is... religious puritanicals being oppressed and have to leave England, I see as we threw out the religious nut jobs and said, here, have a boat. Go wherever you like, as long as it's not here.
Oh, go. Wow. Wow.
No, it's true, though.
Nate disagrees.
I think the circus just added another ring.
So we add in oppression, which is black enchantment for 1 and 2 black. Whenever a player plays a spell, that player discards a Puritan, card from their hand. Okay, so the Puritans, the founding fathers, got to, where did they land? I believe it was somewhere in Mexico.
Plymouth Rock.
Plymouth Rock, okay.
Plymouth.
No reason to disbelieve you, so they landed in Plymouth Rock. And
no, Plymouth.
Plymouth.
Plymouth, of course. Plymouth's Rock, which is in no related to the English city of Plymouth.
All right. Hey, Phil, if I get him to mispronounce things himself, how does that work? What is a ruling on with the sole possession?
This is our least coherent episode ever, by the way, guys.
I think you have a double win there, Nate. You both gain his soul, and another part of his soul actually dies.
Or maybe I gain a part of a soul that already recursively owns itself. So that gives it extra... wow.
Extra soul
anyway,
slavery.
So
yeah, go ahead. Keep talking,
other,
Sean.
Other than religious nut jobs, what were the puritanical people on the whatever that ship was called, the Mayflower?
They were pirates.
Were they? Wow, that bit of the story slipped me by. That would have been way cooler. No, they were
time travelers,
disease carriers. They were disease carriers. They were all creature rats for 2 and 2 black. And when the Pilgrim Fathers got off the boat and went to the graveyard from play, target creature, presumably the Native Americans, got -2/-2 to the end of turn.
Yeah, that's a pretty high mana cost to have that effect, yes. Though.
They're not. I didn't say they were a good card, the Pilgrim Fathers. And what special gift, as they were giving gifts to the totally innocent Native Americans... Native Americans that never hurt a soul in the entire existence of their... they gave them smallpox, didn't they? The answer is smallpox. For just 2 black at sorcery speed, the Native Americans weren't reactive enough. They allowed a sorcery to get them. Each Native American, a.k.a. player, lost 1 life, discarded a card, a.k.a. all their land, sacrificed a creature, then they sacrificed all their land. Okay.
Not all their land.
Well, just one.
Just each time that you inflict smallpox on the population.
Well, I mean, they could have just got a generic pox, which does the same, but for a third for each player of their land, life, and cards and creatures. But it's a bit mean, so I left it out. Right, so...
Yeah, it's pretty rough.
Yeah, it's a good spell. Everyone was starved and dying. And then what happened? They had a good harvest, didn't they? There was a good harvest. And who do you call upon, Phil, if you want a good harvest?
You call upon the goddess of harvests, Karametra.
Well, you would, apart from the Puritanical Bible says you can't, you're going to hell, that's false idolatry, you're a bad man. But, you know, in this case, they did call upon Karametra.
Say something I didn't already know.
So for three, a green and a white, you get a legendary enchantment creature, God, who's indestructible. As long as your devotion to green and white is less than seven, Karametra isn't a creature, she's a 6/7 when she is a creature. Whenever you cast a creature spell, you may search your library for forest or plains, put that card onto the battlefield tapped, then shuffle your library. There you go. That's good. And all the founding fathers became fat and bloated with their huge bumper crop of not pox, smallpox ridden wheat.
But only as long as they repopulated did they get to expand their territory by manifest destiny.
Well, at that point, I've diverted away, Nate. I'm sure that I could have maybe done a 100-card list telling the story of Thanksgiving. But I've skipped just to Thanksgiving dinner. Right? So the first Thanksgiving dinner where old Isaiah Yosefferson, whoever he would have been called.
No, he was one of the pilgrims, yes.
Yeah, yeah. He was the father of the feast. He got to carve that first Thanksgiving turkey. How would you describe him? The head of the table, the lord of dinner. No, you'd describe him as the master of the feast, wouldn't you?
But only if he was horned, bloated, and had wings flying above the feast, yes.
That's true. That founding father was a 1/2 black for a 5/5 flying enchantment creature demon. 3 mana for a 5/5 flying demon, and at the beginning of your upkeep, he let all of the other founding fathers, each of his opponents, draw a card. That's so generous of him.
Okay. I was wondering what commander would play this, and I had to look up Nekuzar again. But yes, Nekuzar would maybe potentially want to play this.
Yeah, you might put it in Nath if everyone's discarding.
No, I don't. No, no. No, that does not work.
As a better Nath player than me, yeah, I'd agree. Yeah, that's fine. So everyone was happy. Everyone was happy they were being led by a demon. I'm sure that's how I interpreted the story. Everyone started eating a bit too much. You know, next year's Thanksgiving dinner, instead of having one side dish, they had... Not only did they have Campbell's soup with green beans floating in it, they had some portobello mushrooms with soy sauce and brown sugar randomly in a rectangular dish. We called this one crap we had laying around the kitchen casserole.
Hey, and, you know, those first years at Plymouth Rock were really difficult. I mean, they put all sorts of in their green bean casserole.
So... What they did is they were expanding, aggressively expanding their land, and they were becoming bloated, and they needed a symbol of their corpulent wealth. So one of them created the Horn of Greed.
Greed.
The Horn of Greed was a 3-to-cast artifact, I have you know, that said whenever any player plays a land, that player may draw a card. Well, they have to draw a card, they didn't even may. And more false idolatry going on here. And eventually, the whole 200-year history of your country. Is 200 years you've been going, is it? Well done, guys. Well done. Bravo. You all became gluttonous zombies.
Wait. I use Horn of Greed in Borberg Most Enraged.
Yeah, you do. Yeah, you do.
Instead of Master of the Feast, in Nath, you play Temple Bell instead, so you have control over it.
Oh, and Temple Bell also tells a Thanksgiving story, doesn't it?
What?
Just move along.
All the religious pilgrims who left England because they were chased out by the Tories. They were very religious people, and they had temples. They built temples.
With bells.
With bells in them, just like the American Indians.
You can't have a temple without a bell.
No, of course not.
So, after the Horn of Greed and your greedy ways, you all became, after 200 years, gluttonous zombies. That's right. You all became three black creature zombies with fear. And
for the most part, that's correct.
Wait, yep. Sean, can you say that again? I was refilling my Slurpee Big Gulp.
Well, you know, when you get down to halfway, which is only 30 ounces left.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost out. You know, I start to panic when that happens.
I need to eat that third tub of Choc-Apocalypse ice cream, which you guys sent me in the mail. And you only cost a bargain for a 3-3 black creature with fear. 4 and a black. God, that's a shite card. What a load of bollocks. And the last point is a cap on the Thanksgiving story from a British perspective. Now, this might have affected some of mainland Europe. And what's happened in this country, right, is Walmart bought a chain of supermarkets called Asda, a very popular chain of supermarkets. And to most accounts, they're fine. They haven't started selling high-powered assault rifles next to the children's toys or whatever it is you do in your country's supermarkets yet.
Yeah.
What Walmart have done, though...
Well, what do you sell next to your children's toys? Prophylactics?
Fruit and vegetables? Exercise, like outdoor gut toys, like hula hoops and swings? I don't know. American flags that English people can burn. They're next to the...
The stories you tell.
So what Walmart have done is they introduced into this country for the first time with no significant reason, because we don't celebrate Thanksgiving. They introduced Black Friday as a concept.
Now, New York has invented yet another holiday and inflicted it upon your consumers.
Pause for a second. So the first year it happened, it was okay, right? Because it was really just Walmart and Asda. Oh, not Asda. Asda is Walmart in this country. Amazon did a sort of digital Black Friday as well when they realized what Walmart/Asda were going to be doing in Britain. And it was okay. There was a little bit of craziness. You could get a bargain. So that was 2 years ago.
Has your email address been inundated with Black Friday advertisement spam?
Last year, lots of shops cottoned on and did midnight openings. And there were literal, and I'm not exaggerating, literal scenes of women, children, and men having fist fights in the aisles of Asda just to punch a woman to take the television she grabbed off the shelf off her and run to a till to pay for it.
Oh, sweet. Yes.
It was like watching an Al-Qaeda recruitment video. Honestly, they could have just put a strap line at the bottom saying, this is what we are fighting against, and put it up over the news footage, and I would have gone, I kind of get it.
This is all a false flag campaign by Amazon to convince everyone to get deliveries.
So I'm not going to discuss it too much because we discussed it in some detail last week.
I mean, never mind.
The card to finish this segment off. The card to finish off, my spirit of Thanksgiving story is Black Market. Boom, drops Mike. That's right. I've gone all political on you. And that's why I promised I couldn't not go political and religious at the beginning of this episode. Now, on the side note, I am an Americanophile. I love American films. I love American music. I especially love American sport. I go to America on holiday, vacation. I try and go once a year. Since my son's been born, I've not been able to do that. I've spent months of my life over in the United States. But that is my honest interpretation of Thanksgiving. How accurate was I? on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the most accurate, guys?
you were very close, Sean. I would say that you rate an 8 out of 10 in terms of Thanksgiving interpretations, with a 10 being having lived through the founding of the Plymouth Colony.
The Plymouth Colony. Down your neck. So I guess my message of the week is that I've learnt two lessons as an English person studying Thanksgiving. The first lesson is one person's person who's being oppressed for a religion is another person's crazy zealot, or zealous conscript, you might say.
Yeah.
And the second one is, f*** you, Walmart. F*** you. Yeah, I was expecting the boops. That's fine. And that's my message of the week. Happy Thanksgiving, everyone.
Happy Thanksgiving, everyone.
It's ironic that the football game I'll be watching on Thanksgiving Sunday is the New York Giants, who are the official NFL team of the Commander and Podcast,
yes,
versus the Washington Redskins, which in many ways is like Yankees killing the Native Americans.
Oh my.
And if you like Giants, there's a Boros Commanders deck for you.
Guys, can I ask a question to our listeners, which I've not discussed with you, so cut it if we decide not to do it, but it's for a theme for next week's episode, and I wanted to get it in now to get people to send us tweets first.
Okay.
So the theme I wanted to discuss, because it came to me from talking to people, was underrated cards in Commander. What are the best underrated cards in Commander? So if we just put it out in the episode now rather than just tweet it, everyone can message us in. And I just want to do a little quick bit where I say, for example, like what I classify as underrated, but give us your favourite underrated cards and why you think they're underrated, or amusing stories about how you've used them.
Right. And so they can send these comments to cast@commanderandmtg.com. They can always tweet them at us and post on the Facebook page as well.
So, listeners, next week's show, which we will be recording this time next week, so you'll have a few days to get your submissions in before we do it. Our topic is going to be most underrated cards in Commander. So cards that aren't super expensive. So we're going to say, what are we going to say, guys? A $2 budget on these cards? We're going to go the full Nate. We'll go $1 budget on these cards.
Why restrict it at all?
Okay.
Hey, listeners. Now.
No restriction on these cards. Any budget you like. So we're looking for most underrated cards in Commander. By underrated, we mean cards which you've used that you don't seem to see in a lot of decks, or are never talked about on our show or any other audio you listen to, or when you're going through EDH Rec or Tapped Out or Deck Stats or anywhere you get your Commander deck building content from. You never see these cards appear, but are always good for you. So we want to hear them all. We're going to discuss them. We like hearing from you guys. We like hearing your ideas. And we think it'll be fun to do. If you want to send in your most underrated cards, how can they send it in? Where should they send it to, Philip?
Well, they should send it to cast@commanderandmtg.com. That's our email address. They can always tweet it at us. You can just search for Commander and MTG Podcast on Twitter or on Facebook and post a comment on our page.
Or YouTube or mtgcast.com and Reddit.
And we will hoover them up and discuss them next week. So, that should be fun.
It should be fun.
I think.
Yeah, it'll be a blast. Your early tweet has already generated quite a few very fun responses. And so now what we should do is try to get stories out of people as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So stories. So any times you've used those cards, guys, or so humorous stories or situations where you discovered the card, and let's see if we can find some cards. I love that moment when you're listening to Magic audio media or watching like Tulare and Community College and stuff, and you see a card that you've never seen before.
Yeah.
And you go, oh my god, where have you been all my life, and get excited about it. That's one of my favorite things about this format.
Yeah, it's like that what is it, Shared Triumph tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for introducing that card to me. That was wonderful.
You're welcome.
You'll see it again. Yeah, but it's really the listeners that make this worthwhile. I mean, the mention, of course, from Bruce Richard was wonderful. It's always wonderful to see stuff like that. But we love our listeners. I mean, they're fun. And not they are fun, but you folks are fun. You tell us what you think. You even playtest your decks with us. It's awesome. That is what we do this for. It's because we know we're making people smile, laugh on occasion, drive into a few concrete pylons. Don't do that. Try not to do that. Just switch us off. Go to MTA Cast or The Command Zone or any number of other worthy podcasts and listen to them before you kill yourself because we get too far into whatever it is we're getting into. Take the time to contact us. Tell us what you think. And if you really like us, really, here's the begging again. Give us a 5-star rating on iTunes, even podbay.fm. We need to go back and reread those, guys, by the way.
Yes, we do.
It not only makes us feel better about doing this and waking up at crazy hours, because usually Sean is waking up early, but since I've been in Japan, I've been waking up early. Nate is always awake. I don't know how he does it, but...
Yeah, there's a bunch of YouTube comments you haven't even seen.
That's right. That's right. We need to... Okay, what we've got to do is a mailbag episode where we take all of the comments from all the various sources and read the funniest and or best of them. And so
that, you took the words right out of my mouth, sir.
Excellent. Sean, you can have your tongue back, though. I don't need that.
That wasn't me.
No, I mean, I took the words right out of you. No.
Oh, I'm doing some Foley sound effects for you.
Okay, great. Oh, that's disgusting. So we'll point to those ratings and we'll be able to say, hey, look at that. And those people who care about it will come on our show or give us guests or give us maybe even previews to share with you someday. Our theme song was created for the podcast by Mr. Nate Burgess. Our logo was created for the podcast by Mr. Picto. With assistance from Kelly, you can find Mr. Picto at mrpicto.co.uk. Special thanks to our tech whizzes, Jesse Thompson and Graham Frank, and to Justin, of course, for his server space. You can reach us by going to our website, commander@mtg.com. Our email is cast@commander@mtg.com. We've already mentioned that once or twice this episode. Find us on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, MTGcast, and Reddit, and apparently podbay.fm by searching for Commander and MTG Podcast. Individually, on Twitter, I'm at Ketjack.
I am at Copain26.
I'm at Mr. Plorg.
Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. We hope you enjoy the show as much as we enjoyed recording it.
Happy, what's it called? Thanksgiving?
Yep.
And that's our show. Yeah! Gobble, 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 gobble.
Gobble, gobble, gobble.
Nate looks up cards on the internet. Nate looks up cards on the internet. Nate looks up cards on the internet. What are you doing in this break? Boom.